Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Yada Yada Radio and our Shabbat celebration of the Torah. How are you guys? I know we have Larry on the line. I think I saw earlier JP. I don't see him on the line currently, but hi, Larry.
Hi. Doing fine. Long week.
Oh, really?
Glad we're into the Shabbat here. Well, just really, just a lot of work and several kind of knockdown, drag out debates. I had one debate with a fellow that at the end of all said, if you ate, for a guy that's Torah observant, you eat pork. I went, oh boy, there it goes again.
Yeah,
I'll tell you the really wild part about it.
Mm-hmm.
He came off with this, we're commanded to love everyone. So like the Christian God, we're not to have any ability to make sound judgments. And we're commanded.
Yeah, so there's
to love everyone. I said, can you show me that, please? He pulled out Matanyahu, which I don't believe Yahusha said that. I don't believe it. It's senseless. Love everyone as yourself. And then went to Luke. And this is a guy that rails about Paul all the time.
Yeah.
Now, for a guy that's going to rag on me for eating pork, it sounds like he ate the whole damned ham.
Yeah, you know,
he's not doing this.
Yeah, the first concept is that while God would clearly like us, prefer us to love our fellow man, and that really is the gist of what Yahusha was saying, is that, you know, the world would be a better place if we did love our fellow man. The fact is that love cannot be commanded. If love could be commanded, there'd be no purpose of the universe, there'd be no purpose of choice, there'd be no value in free will. Love is, by its very nature, uncommandable. You can't go...
It's choice.
If love was commandable, I would have gone to the prettiest girl in my high school and I would have commanded her not only to go out on a date with me, but to fall in love with me. And, you know... I could have even gone to the principal and said, "Yeah, I want you to command her."
And you would go up to the most vile, indecent human being you could find in all of history and love them too, wouldn't you?
Yeah, of course. The other problem beyond the fact that love cannot be commanded, love can be requested. It can be returned. It can be enjoyed. It can be nurtured. But it can't be commanded. So the premise is entirely not only errant, but absurd. The realization is that Yahweh tells us quite often that he does not love. And in reality, as we have talked many times, unless you're in a position where you hate that which is adverse to those that you love, then you really aren't loving those who are close to you. I was on an airplane yesterday, and my last leg, I was talking to a woman who had been a Roman Catholic, had left the Catholic Church, had two young children, and we were talking about the difference between the actual God and the religious God. And I said, you know, it's this notion in religion that God loves everybody. But I said, you know, you're a mother, you have two young children. Would you love someone who sought to harm your children? Or would you despise them and go after that individual with everything you have? That's what loving parents do. Why would God be any different? So since God clearly spends much of his time in his Torah telling us that he hates much of human behavior and wide swaths of humanity, he certainly would be a hypocrite if he commanded us to love beyond the fact that it's impossible. You know, the other part of of the argument too is that shamar, to observe, and shama, to listen to, do not mean to obey. There is no Hebrew word for to obey, and those concepts...
There's nothing about them that comes close to obey.
No, not even remotely. And that's what's so amazing, JB, is that in your English Bibles, you will read obey hundreds of times. And that is because the Hebrew word, shema, is written hundreds of times. And it's always written in the context of listen to what Yahweh has to say. How do you extrapolate from listen to obey? I mean, I listen to the radio. There's sports presentations, and they talk about how talented Tom Brady is as a quarterback. I can listen to it, but there's no way I can obey it. You know, I know
something.
News. Why would I want to, you know, the difference between listening to the news and obeying the news is like the Grand Canyon.
Night and day.
Night and day.
Well, this particular fellow is a hand holder, and he's one of these guys always wringing his hands, getting what appears to me to be Christians into a group and teaching them a word. And he's a one-trick pony. And besides exposing Paul, he's a one-trick pony. They've replaced Yahweh's name with God. No, they replaced it with Lord.
Yeah.
And he's on this constant tear about this pagan name, God, which is an English noun, used in the same way Elohim is used, because Yahweh talks about false Elohim. And he really gets cumbersome and tired. And see, over many years, actually, I've told him 100 times, it isn't law, it isn't obey, and it isn't command. That's a Lord doing that. And Yahweh's nature is not that of a Lord. That's one of the reasons, besides being Baal's moniker, that Lord is not a good word to use. Well, he still sports the King James Version Bible and goes on about calling Yahweh God, but has no problem calling him Lord because he did so in the debate. So, you know, in my opinion... then I went to one of these people's pages and it said Jesus versus Paul. Jesus versus Paul. So you got a caricature versus a liar. It's just unbelievable.
Yeah.
And then calling them brothers. You know, how many brothers do we have out there? I know they're in the thousands.
Yeah.
And you consider all the billions that are out there. So I don't quickly call anybody a brother. I just don't do that, unless I really believe that. I would call you a brother. I would call Fred a brother. I would call Sheree a sister.
Yeah.
You know, and many people in this chat room, I would not call some guy who has Jesus versus Paul my brother. And I'm sorry.
It's good that somebody knows the testimony of Yahusha. They don't know his name, but they know that God's testimony is in conflict with, versus suggesting conflict with, Paul's. That's a good start. That's a good thing. I don't want to, I wouldn't discourage that. You know, there's the website called Jesus' Words Only. I personally don't go there. Personally, I don't recommend it. But there is benefit in comparing what God said to what Paul said so as to expose and demean Paul. But at some point along the way, the excuse, well, I can't use Yahusha as a name because people wouldn't know who I'm talking to. And that's the English version of his name. He knows who we're talking about. And if you were to change everything, then all of a sudden, you're making a religion out of the words, and no one will know what you're talking about. I mean, it's the excuse that they will use. But I'm here to tell you, knowing that Paul was a false prophet, while important, it's not nearly as important as knowing that there is no God named Jesus.
Yeah.
I don't think there's many things more important than knowing Yahusha, because it tells us that he's not important.
Yeah. Going back to the whole love thing, Sheree pointed out, You know, loving someone is sharing God's word with them. You know, loving someone isn't sitting there and letting them eat poison. It's slapping the spoon out of their hand and telling them what they're eating.
Right. Yeah, and of course, those that would make the draw the line in the sand with pork, that's their thing, is pork.
Yeah, that's it. That's all they had.
Well, that's really all they've got. A, they don't know that it wasn't a commandment. B, they don't know that three of the animals listed there have never existed. C, they do not know that there was a repetitive theme about eating things that chew cud, because it means that you're fully digesting that which is good for you, and a recurring theme about eating that which has a divided hoof, which means that you're understand the concept of being separated. And three of the animals, of which the animal itself did not exist, but they, if you look at the root of the words, they trace to the kind of animals that were made legend in religious circles. There are insights on the food instructions that are very beneficial to us, and we can learn a lot from them. Now, does that mean that it's a great idea to go out and eat pork? Yeah, probably not. Does that mean that eating pork somehow is going to estrange a person who has accepted the terms and conditions of the covenant from Yahweh? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. And a proof of that, beyond the fact that it's not a commandment, it simply says this is good for you to eat, this is not good for you to eat, and most of it requires us to think beyond the superficial meaning of the words, because, as I say, three of the animals don't even exist.
Sort of like Bikurim, isn't it? Where,
yeah.
You know, he's not really talking about barley there.
Exactly.
Sort of
you
like
three
good fruit.
Right. Yeah, we're not talking about fruit on Bikurim.
Matzah
talking
has
about
nothing to
adoption.
Do with bread.
Right. That's correct. Matzah has nothing to do with bread, and everything to do with the symbolism of the kernel separated from the chaff that is then ground into flour without the fungus of yeast. You know, there's a lot to digest there. But there's, of course, if you stop at, well, I'm just going to have bread without yeast, you'll miss everything. You'll miss the entire benefit of the discussion. But what I was going to say is that Dode, whom we're studying here, and we're going to regroup here at line 162, so we're nearing the end. Dode is a perfect example. Yahweh said he's righteous. Did Dode violate the Torah in places that were a lot more important than pork?
Yes.
So, eating pork, is that going to estrange someone who has accepted the terms and conditions of the covenant, who loves Yahweh's testimony, who's come to love Yahweh based on who he is and what he said about himself, based on Dode, whom we know Yahweh said was righteous? Is there any chance in the world that eating pork is going to keep you away from Yahweh?
No.
Swallowing. Now, there are some things where he draws a hard line and says, you know, this is it. If you do not answer his invitations to meet with him and celebrate the mikra, that's a hard line. If you don't accept the conditions of the covenant, hard line. If you're not circumcised as a male, hard line, which is one of the terms and conditions of the covenant. If you don't observe his Torah, his teaching, hard line. I mean, there are some things that you can do that will preclude a relationship. But consuming an occasional piece of bacon isn't one of them. So.
It was just amazing to me because he was showing it all over himself. And I was sitting there thinking to myself.
It's so obvious, too, about the Torah, Larry. You know, we've talked about this before, is that there are probably a quarter of the things that are prescribed and encouraged in the Torah that cannot be done.
That's right.
There is no temple. There are no
Lowy. There's no
Lowy,
storehouse.
Those who act as officials mediating on Yahweh's behalf. We don't have a perfectly accurate scroll of the Torah. We don't have access to the mercy seat, the Ark of the Covenant. We don't live in the land of Israel, and even if we did, doing many of the things that Yahweh requests can't even be done in the land of Israel without causing a riot or breaking the law. I'm just a guess here. I'd say that there's probably 20, 30, 40% of the things that are specifically prescribed in the Torah that are not pertinent today, like the instructions on picking up kindling on the Shabbat. It's just not practical today because most of us do not warm our homes nor cook our meals with kindling. Now, that known...
I warm my house with it, but...
You actually have a wood stove?
Yes, and 90% of the time that's what I use instead of the heater.
I think that's
I love it.
Great. Yeah. Most of the wood in the stove, though, is probably actual wood as opposed to kindling. You know, you start the fire with kindling. Kindling is not what you burn.
No, there's pretty much always a bed of hot coals that I just throw wood onto.
Right, yeah. So you're actually not using kindling. Kindling is what, and the whole reference of kindling is what you use to start a fire. And fires rage, they consume, they destroy. And the instruction was about kindling or starting a fire, not stoking an existing fire. But it's not pertinent today. However, everything
described,
100% of it, is beneficial today in terms of enlightening us. Illuminating our understanding so we know who Yahweh is, what he's offering, what he expects, how to properly understand his nature, to convey his nature. It teaches us so that we can teach others. 100%. There isn't any aspect of it that doesn't have something that we can learn from. You know, you even take all of the names and the genealogies that are found in the wilderness, in Numbers. And every one of them, if you study the names and then you connect the names as they're presented, you go, whoa, extremely insightful. So those who would cite the Christian New Testament and to prove a point that cannot be proven using the Torah, I have no clue how to observe the Torah, which is why we have not once but twice devoted long periods of time to going through the 119th Psalm, because it reveals in the inspired words of the individual that Yahweh loved most in the entire world how to properly observe the Torah. And does the 176 verses, 176 statements in this psalm. So you would expect that if eating pork was a deal breaker, it would be mentioned often. How many times do you think pork comes up in the 119th psalm?
Never.
They count zero.
Yeah, zero. Okay, there's those that would say that the Torah is made up of laws, that there's 613 of these laws. How many laws would you find in the Torah? The 119th Psalm.
Not a one.
Not one? Okay. The 119th Psalm is a celebration of four primary concepts that are all tied to four overriding concepts, if you will. I mean, the overriding concepts are observe the Torah. recognize that the Torah is the word of Yahweh. Recognize that Yahweh's word is his promise. Understand that Yahweh's testimony is enduring and it's restoring. So you've got enduring and restoring testimony. You have Imra, which is promise. You have Dabar, which is Yahweh's word. You have Torah, which is teaching. Those are the huge overriding concepts that Dode says, that's the palette of information that we should observe. That's the color spectrum right there. And those colors have been used to paint this marvelous picture that we can view from a variety of different perspectives. And there's four primary concepts that we should use, we should focus on as we look at this picture. And, you know, they are the choke, which are that which Yahweh has inscribed, etched in stone, if you will, that teach us how to live so that we're cut into the relationship. There's the mitzvah, which are the terms and conditions of the covenant. There's the mishpat, which tell us how Yahweh resolves disputes. They happen to be the mikra. And the terms of the covenant are the five things that we've all come to embrace. Worth repeating. They are to walk away from the institutions of man, from your country, from Babylon. And this is not, again, God's not saying, well, why are you still standing or sitting in the United States or in Great Britain or in New Zealand or in Mexico or Colombia, wherever you may be this evening, or in Canada? He's not talking about your physical presence. He's talking about your attitude, your state of mind, your willingness to disassociate yourself from religion and politics. That's the first, that's a prerequisite. If you're going to cling to a religious God and a Lord, then you're not welcome in God's family. It's a prerequisite. Second, you need to trust and rely on Yahweh. To trust and rely on him, you have to do what Dode did. You've got to prioritize knowing him through his Torah testimony and then coming to understand what it is that he's offering, which is what this psalm is all about, telling us what we need to understand to benefit from Yahweh. And that's what you have to trust and rely. You need to know, you need to understand. Walk to him and become perfect, which is, he's invited us to meet with him seven times a year to celebrate his means of delivering the benefits of the covenant. Those are the Moed Mikra, beginning with Pesach, Matzah, Bukurim, and Shavua. And then God reminds us that there's really nothing more important for us to do. When we're in that mindset, we're meeting with him, we're trusting and relying upon him, we're dissociating ourselves from religion and politics, he wants us to study, to think about, to closely examine and carefully consider the terms and conditions of the covenant. These five things that we're talking about. And then, lastly, he has asked us as parents to circumcise our sons as our commitment to raise them to come to know Yahweh and participate in the covenant, but also so that we and they remember that that's the single most important job in our lives, is to be parents and to guide our children towards Yahweh. And so those are the mitzvah, and we know the mitzvot, and we know the choke, and then the pakudim was the last of the things that he focused on consistently all the way through. And pakudim is instructions, recommendations, prescriptions, if you will, that help us properly respond to Yahweh, because it is, after all, about volition, about choice. He's made the offer. He puts the ball in our court.
Right. And you know, when you get somebody that really just doesn't have a basic understanding of anything other than, I'm like Spot the dog, I obey commands, then, you know, they're pretty hopeless in the long run. I mean, if they really want to meet Yahweh on that level, I've obeyed all your commands, well, then, you know, Would you spend somebody with eternity with somebody like that? I wouldn't.
No. In fact, yesterday, as I because I sold my airplane a few weeks ago, I was flying.
Congratulations.
Yeah. I had to sell it for tax reasons. It's a long story, but flying commercial on the way back, that was not much of fun, I'll tell you. And several times, I found myself in row like 32 out of 35 in an airplane, and standing behind this wall of humanity, grappling with their possessions, and it's almost like there wasn't a combined brain amongst the entire group. And I'm sitting there standing in the back for 20 minutes, trapped in this airplane, can't move. And it's just this idea that you got, and even to get on the airplane, I mean, there's so many rules. So you can have one bag like this, can only be like this, can't be any bigger than that. You can put it here.
Oh, yeah, you're now
there.
A criminal walking on
Yeah,
there.
You can it's say just, this, you can't say I that, you can walk here, can't walk there. You got to undress to go through the this line. You can't kid with anybody, can't make any kind of a statement. I mean, it's the whole thing is a miserable experience. I mean, and to be treated like that, where you have to obey the orders of people that have been put in charge, or there is terrible consequence for eternity. I mean, I darn near wanted to commit Harry Carey, and I only, endured it for about 6 or 7 hours yesterday. I'm not cut out for the submit and obey stuff.
Yeah, it's gotten to a point with me where it just, I explained it over and over. This particular fellow, I had explained to him the Torah is in no way law. It is not law. It is not law. That's the rabbinic view of the Torah. That is not Yahweh's view of the Torah, and Torah doesn't mean law. I shared the note with him 50 times. It has a breakdown on every base root word that is in Torah. What does he come right back with? The law and command. And I thought, well, you're just a hopeless idiot.
Yeah.
And I was not kind.
Yeah. And by the way, in Hebrew, there is a mood that is capable of expressing a command. It's the imperative. And yet, some 90% of the time the imperative mood is used, it is actually an expression of volition. And if you look at the 10 statements that most people that are going to make laws out of the Torah will say those are the top 10 laws in the
Ten
in the Torah.
Commandments.
Yeah, the 10 commandments. There's only one of the 10 where you will find a statement written in the imperative mood.
And that's the one where he's,
wouldn't
don't
they
remove
all have
my
to
name.
Be in the imperative? Yeah, mm-hmm. But if they were commandments, wouldn't they all have to be in the imperative?
Yeah, well, sure they would have to be. Yeah. Of course they would have to be.
Yeah, and the one
and they're not.
The in the imperative is the one about choosing to view your mother and father as meritorious, as significant.
Is that the one? I thought it was removing his name, deceiving in his name.
Shaw.
He will not forgive.
Yeah, that's what he won't forgive in that particular case. But
that was
the
roughest
sound. Including, by the way, even that one, are written in the imperfect. Now, imperfect
Right.
Is a
means
it's
got to be an ongoing
a,
behavior.
It's not a mood.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. It's right. But I don't want to give the impression that the imperative and the imperfect are related concepts. They aren't. The imperfect and the perfect are conjugations. The perfect speaks of a completed act or thought, where the imperfect speaks of that which is ongoing, and the imperative is a mood. Most moods in Hebrew express either first, second, or third person volition. The imperative almost always expresses volition, and the realization that the statements are universally written in the imperfect is probably the one of the most insightful aspects about why you can't refer to the Ten Commandments. I mean, the fact that only one used the mood, which would suggest a command, is insightful. But the fact they were written in the imperfect is also insightful in terms of degrading the concept of a commandment that you have to obey. You know, I was driving on this trip to the Denver area, actually, to Beaver Creek. It's outside of Vail, Colorado. So I was driving this time as opposed to, and I flew back. I was pulled over by a policeman via radar on an interstate where I was driving 89 miles an hour, and the speed limit was posted at 80 miles an hour. So nobody
so
around.
10 miles, not even 10
9
miles,
miles an hour over speed limit. I typically, when I drive, I set the cruise control at 9 miles an hour over the speed limit. I've crossed the country driving 8-9 times, and I've never found any cop ever pulled me over at 9 miles an hour over the speed limit, ever. You know, driving 45 years, I've never been cited for 9 miles an hour over the speed limit. I have been cited for speeding in, you know, in a 35 zone where you're going 50, which, you know, there's some divided highways that are posted at 35, and you find the flow of traffic goes at 50. He pulled me over and gave me a ticket. And, you know, I told him my discontent that 9 miles over the speed limit in perfect conditions, he ought to be giving me an award, not a citation. The fact is that I was 9 miles over the speed limit, and then, of course, I slowed to a stop so he'd give me the ticket. I was not continuing to violate the speed limit. In fact, after he gave me the ticket, he told me, I would not have cited you if you were 8 miles an hour over the speed limit. So I asked him, I said, you know, what's the number? And he says, well, it's 8 miles an hour over the speed limit. If you were 8, I would not have cited you. Okay. So I was, from that point on, I was never 9 miles an hour over the speed limit again. I was not on an ongoing basis, I was not in violation of the speed law. Did that cause my ticket to go away?
Nope.
Now,
they still want their money.
If I'm paying attention to Yahweh's instructions and they're written in the imperfect, and I stop bearing false witness, then anything that I have previously done no longer counts against me because I am no longer in violation of the statute. But on a law, if you break the law, the fact that you don't break the law on another time doesn't get you out of the consequence of breaking the law once. You know, for example, Yahweh's instruction, don't make a habit of killing. And the law says, you know, if you kill once, you're going to either forfeit your life or forfeit, you know, your freedom. That's the difference between man's laws and Yahweh's instructions. He wrote them in the imperfect, which means they can't be laws, because if they were laws, a single violation would cause you to be guilty, and the imperfect does not allow that.
Now, that would have been an interesting situation, considering the person who scribed the Torah had killed someone.
Yes, exactly. So,
I imagine if that hadn't been in the imperfect, Moses probably would have had something to say.
Yeah, that's correct. Absolutely. Moses killed a man. So, but was Moses in violation of the Torah statement, don't make a practice of killing?
No.
The author of the Torah really wasn't Moshe. He was simply described.
He was described.
Yahweh. Did Yahweh kill?
Yes.
Yes, absolutely. Does Yahweh make a practice of killing? Does he kill on an ongoing basis?
No.
He does it very infrequently. He's done it. He's done it infrequently. He does not make a habit or ongoing practice of it. And therefore, he wrote it in a way that he himself is consistent with what he presented. And if it were a law, you cannot kill. You shall not kill. Then Yahweh himself would be guilty of violating it if it were written in the perfect. So there's so many things that you can think about. And from our perspective, we have two benefits. One is we've taken the time to examine the moods, the conjugations, and come to know what God said, and therefore we have that advantage. We actually know what he said, but beyond that, we know him. And when you come to know him, you automatically know that the concept of Torah cannot mean law, that Yahweh cannot be Lord, that there can't be a Hebrew word for obey. It's one of those things,
you just look at it in a rational way, it's obvious.
Mm-hmm. If you look at it a rational way, it is obvious. If you are informed, it is obvious. If you understand, it is obvious. Now, that does not mean that Larry's argument on behalf of Torah, meaning teaching and guidance, not law, and Shema, and Shamar, meaning listen and observe, not obey, or do, or keep, it does not mean that it's going to be obvious to the person who does not know what Yahweh says, who does not understand what he's offering, that does not know him, that does not do those things, that does not listen, that it does not observe. For them, it's not going to be obvious. Never going to be obvious. So, that said, let's move on.
Well, typically, though, people that look at the Torah as law do not observe anything. They don't observe anything.
Yeah.
You know, they say, well, can I turn on a light switch on the Shabbat? Things like that. I've actually heard it.
Yeah,
that amazed me then.
Yeah, because the rabbis
come over and do it for them.
Yeah, no, the rabbis have written long rulings and arguments on how to function in an elevator that requires pushing the buttons, and how to deal at night with rooms that where there are lights. You know, there were two people while I was traveling. One was sadistic as a Jew. They had the black hat, the black suit, the little curly hairs, you know, the full religious makeup. And the other one had the sun god yarmulke with the what do they call those clips? The kind of clips that you have to clip it to your hair to keep it in place. They don't put magic glue on them.
A barrette?
A barrette, yeah. That's a barrette. And he just go, oh, my
yeah.
God. No wonder Muslims want to kill you. You are disgusting. I wanted so badly to say, are you wearing that religious get-up to endear yourself to other like-minded men? Or because you think that you are pleasing your God?
It's an embarrassment to humanity, period. You know, I don't know. You know, people that play religious dress-up drive me crazy. They really do, all of them.
It's one of the things that I find the most disgusting is religious dress-up.
Oh, I hate it. You know, Michael Rood's out there playing religious dress-up as he's trying to make a fortune off Yahweh's name. I doubt if he makes much of a living, but, you know, he's out there doing it. And it's just pathetic. It's pathetic.
Well, his last organization very successfully drove him out based upon perpetrating fraud and confiscating monies that were donated to the ministry. He turned out to be a con man.
He was a con man all the way around when he started.
Yeah, he's nothing but a con man. He's also, I don't know how where I ran across. Oh, I know where I ran across him when I went to a conference where there were publishers, and it was I think Christian broadcasters. It was back in the day that I had just written Tea with Terrorists, and I needed a publicist for it, and I thought that at the time that I also needed to make contact with people that were in the publishing and media business. And that's where that was a lot of years ago, 12, 13 years ago now. I would never do that now, but, thank God that his instructions are written in the imperfect, because I've stopped doing that sort of thing. But I did it, and there was one of the booths that I had this guy playing rabbi dress up. He had the beard. He had the white robes and all that sort of thing. And he was playing, you know, had the sandals, the complete religious dress up. He was Michael Rood. And I remember picking up some of the literature that was there. I have it with me now. And he was actually predicting the Yahweh's return. And it was, I think it was 2006 on the materials that he was publishing. I don't think he got that right.
Missed it a bit.
Missed it a bit. He also refers to himself as a rabbi. It's not a good thing to call oneself. Yeah, but he's like so many. He has a few things right.
Yeah.
You know, the only thing that you can do if you want to be right is make certain that everything that you say, think, and share is consistent with what Yah was saying. You know, just share his testimony and it'll work out fine. It's kind of like Larry saying when the guy said you're commanded to love everyone, and you say, all right, if that's the case, pal, why don't you show me where Yahweh says that? No, you got the entirety of the Torah, prophets, and Psalms. Where does he say that? And of course, he turns to the Christian New Testament because God doesn't say that. All right, here's something that he did inspire. It's Psalm 119, 162 is where we laid off. In it, Dode makes a comment that is consistent with a conclusion that I came to about 10 years ago. I am convinced to this day that it is true. I think that the Torah is the single most valuable thing in the universe. I don't think there's anything in the universe more valuable than the Torah. I think it is the greatest treasure that exists. And I say that because the Torah is the only way for us to come to know who Yahweh is. It's the only way for us to know how to engage in a relationship with Him. It is the principal source of understanding, teaching, and guidance in the universe. It is our invitation to meet with the Creator of the universe. It provides the most all-encompassing and accurate teaching on the nature of the universe and on life itself. So I view the Torah as the single most valuable item in the universe. Without the Torah, God is unknown. Without the Torah, salvation is impossible. Without the Torah, life is meaningless. Now, here's what Dode has to say. I am more pleased with your word than discovering great treasure. Now, here's a man that certainly had access to great treasure. Yet, from his perspective, his attitude towards what was valuable, he thought that the word of Yahweh was more valuable than all of the treasure that man could accumulate. I think that's true. And I suspect that when you come to the place where you view Yahweh's Torah, His Word, as the most valuable thing, more valuable than any monetary gain, more valuable than any fame, more valuable than any accomplishment or any asset or any piece of property, when you view the Torah as the single most valuable thing in the universe, then everything falls into place for you. I suspect that when we share Dode's perspective on the value of the Torah, then Yahweh shares his appreciation, his love that he expressed for Dode for us. We put ourselves in the same position that Dode is in, as beloved. So, guys, I mean, I'm open to this. Can you think of something more valuable than the Torah? mean, the
covenant is a rhetorical question,
but
right?
I mean, the covenant is unknown. Apart from
I mean,
the
a relationship with Yah, but now again, you can't have that without the Torah. So, yeah, it's pretty much the most valuable thing in the world.
Yeah, I would say being part of the covenant
the
is
universe.
The single most valuable thing in the universe, but you can't be part of the covenant without the Torah, because you wouldn't even know what the covenant was, who you were engaging with, or how to engage without the Torah. The Torah is the path and the key to the invitation to the covenant. So that's Dode's perspective. I share that perspective. But Larry, one of the things that that perspective does at JB is that, like I was talking to this young woman that I flew the last leg of my trip with yesterday, and I told her, you know, your first step in terms of coming to know God, you've already achieved. You walked away from religion. You know that Roman Catholicism was a pile of lies, and so you have completely disassociated from it. And she says, yet I still know there is a God. I just don't know him. I said, well, you know, the second thing you're going to have to do if you're going to know him is you're going to have to want to know him substantially enough that you're going to invest the time. And this valuing Yahweh's word more than anything we can achieve in our jobs, in our relationships, in our lives, is the key to all of that. It's you've got to value knowing him. You've got to view that as worthy of an investment of your time and energy. And when you get there and you not only value it, you love it. And you love it more than anything else, then you put yourself exactly where Dode is and become loved, vindicated by the creator of the universe. So it is, I think, of all of the do's, I suspect this is the most important do, because you cannot love God until you know him. And you can't know him without the Torah. So this is the, towards the end of all of this, because this is a summation. This is part of the conclusion to all of it. And by the way, this statement and those that follow, the seven that follow this statement, are brought to us by the letter Shin. And the letter Shin was written, you know, as depicting two teeth. And so it conveyed two things. One is the word. And so it speaks with, I am more pleased with your word, your Imra, which is your instruction and promise. It begins there because the letter Shin means word. That's why the mouth, the teeth, where words come out. But it also is that which enables us to chew, to be nourished, to take in food, to chew our food, to digest, you know, begin the digestion process of our food. And so it further beyond those two concepts, that this is nourishment for us, that this is the word of God that we're talking about here, the Shin. It's also the first of two letters that differentiate, if you will, and that's probably not the right phrase, but that, how about augment? It's the first of two letters that augment Yahweh from Yahusha. And what I mean by augment is that Yahusha is Yahweh doing something. And so, and the by the Shin being the first of the two letters that differentiate the or augment the name, we're talking about Yahusha being the Word of God. The Ain, of course, is the second, which was drawn as an eye, which means he's the visual manifestation of God. He is the proper perspective from which to view Yahweh, as what the Ain communicates. So, these concepts are brought to us by that letter Shin, the word of Yahweh. So I am more pleased with your word than discovering great treasure. Before we move on to the next verse, there's one other thing I want to add here. There is more to saying that the Torah is the most valuable, not only document in the universe, but the most valuable thing in the universe, than simply stating the obvious, that it's the place where, the only place we're introduced to Yahweh, where we can come to know Him, where it's the only place where the covenant is presented, where its terms and conditions are revealed, where the invitations to be with God are presented. There is something more to the Torah than that. You guys want to take a stab at it?
Well, I mean, yeah, do you want a dissertation here? I mean, you're talking about the only possibility to have a relationship with the creator of the universe. Mm-hmm. It's the only place where you're going to have rich, rewarding relationships for all time.
Right.
It's the only place where you're going to be a stakeholder in the covenant and thus mm-hmm. a part owner in the universe.
Yep. Oh, that's true.
How are those three, just for starters?
Yeah, more powerful. Powerful. There's something even more fundamental and profound than that. Even more fundamental and profound. And that is that Yahweh and His Word are essentially the same. That when you're observing Yahweh's Word, you're observing Yahweh. Yahweh actually represents Himself through His Word. His Torah, the words in His Torah are a more complete representation of who He is than is Yahusha.
Well, Yahusha was actually the Word come to life. So,
correct.
And the Torah was in His
mouth. And so He was the Word come to life in our presence for a very short period of time, only reflecting part of Yahweh's Torah. I mean, He was a diminished manifestation, not just of Yahweh, but a diminished manifestation even of the completeness that is the Torah. And yet He is a diminished manifestation of Yahweh. He is Yahweh, just not the totality of Yahweh. The Torah is a more complete representation of Yahweh than is Yahusha.
And what a shame we don't have a perfect copy of it. What a shame. But then again,
we don't need one.
We don't really need one. I'm looking forward to having one. I am certain that one exists in our world today, and it exists sitting next to the Ark of the Covenant, beneath what is now the Jerusalem bus station, right next to the embankment that is Golgotha, where the upright pole was established. There is a complete, perfectly accurate, original copy of the Torah there. But there is a tremendous advantage in the way that Yahweh went about communicating to us in the Torah, which is when you present the same ideas over and over and over again from slightly different perspectives, what you do is you convey everything that somebody needs to know, even if you don't have a perfect copy. Even though we don't have perfect understanding of the moods, the stems, the conjugations, and the definitions of the words themselves, or even all of the words, we don't have to have a perfect copy to achieve understanding that is sufficient to know who Yahweh is and what He is offering.
As a matter of fact, I do recall Shimon talking about people that had come that were Gentile, that had Goy who had come to get on the path because of words He had spoken to them.
Yeah, exactly.
So,
a way that I think everyone listening here will appreciate. I have said that I had a fear, a concern, really not a fear, but I had a concern in doing the Blog Talk Radio show, and then later Shattering Myths. And my concern was that my knowledge was less complete than the knowledge of somebody that had studied religion, particularly the Bible, in Bible college and had a PhD and had spent their entire lives studying the Bible when I was out working. And I knew there were people that knew more than I did. And I came to realize that I need not be concerned there, because understanding is vastly more important than knowing. Knowing is good, understanding is better. Once you move to understanding, then no matter how much somebody knows, there is nothing that they can say that is going to cause any concern. And so the way I want to relate this is that once you come to understand who Yahweh is as the Father of the Covenant, and once you understand what the Covenant is, which is His family, and once you understand what the Torah is, which is His means of guiding us to Him and to His family, and that you understand that the Mikre are invitations to be called out of this world and to meet with God and to honor the benefits of the, provide the benefits of the Covenant. Once you understand those things, once you understand why He uses 6 plus 1 equals 7. Once you understand that, you don't have to have total and complete, precisely accurate information to know who God is, to engage in a relationship with Him, to enjoy His company, to enjoy a relationship with fellow brothers and sisters in the covenant. It's a perfect copy is not required once you transition from knowing to understanding. That's what Dode did. You don't have to be a perfect person. You don't have to have perfect understanding or perfect knowledge. So you don't even have to have a perfect copy.
No, but it helps to understand that Yahweh, you know, he led from the front. He sacrificed basically himself, a diminished part of himself.
Yep.
And He did not say, upon this church, or upon this rock, I will establish my church.
Oh, no.
He said, Mikre. And
right.
So that's what he did. And,
yeah.
You know, that's that lone path that few people find. And if people, you know, I was just in a debate while we're on the radio, and I have a guy here telling me, your understanding is so awful. I hate people who think like you. And I'm just presenting Yahweh's words throughout the whole thing. Told me Yahusha didn't mean anything. Jesus Christ is a Savior, and all this other nonsense.
Okay, well,
but
good luck with that.
I said good luck with that. But here's what he said about you know, anybody that even changes as much as you know a jot or a tittle. You know, here it is. So he just said you changed his name, and he doesn't agree with you. So go argue with him. And I said, I really don't.
In fact, it actually says Yod. He spoke Hebrew. He didn't speak Greek. And the Greek here is an attempt to transliterate the Hebrew. It was Yod and tittles. The Yod is the first letter of
Yahweh's name.
Yeah, exactly. So when you change the Yod to a J, go from Yahusha to Jesus, you're in a direct discord with the statement that he was making. By the way, the tittles, which are the crowns, are the horizontal strokes of the Hebrew letters. The he in Hebrew, is the thing that makes it unique. Is the tittles, and so you're removing the pronunciation of his name when you remove the yods and tittles.
By the way, just so you know, Yada Amy's on the line, and she's got a question for you.
Okay, go ahead. Let me finish one thought, though, Amy, before we go on. Beyond just saying the yods and the tittles, which are the letter Yod, which is the first letter of Yahweh's name, the hand reaching down and out to us with an open hand, and the tittles, which are comprise the strokes of the Hebrew letters, he was inferring that that even the smallest strokes, the smallest letters, the smallest strokes. At the time that that he was speaking, they had changed the script so that the yod was the smallest letter in Hebrew. But if you go back in time, the smallest letter in Hebrew, in the Hebrew alphabet, was actually the waw, which is the tenth peg. So he's, through that reference, he's actually referenced all four of the letters in his name by saying not a single yod or tittle will be annulled. He has referred to the very letters that comprise his name. Hello, Amy. We haven't talked in a long time. We occasionally get, as you would call him, Willie, chat with us, but we haven't had the pleasure of hearing you in a long while. How have you been?
Oh, just fine, thank you. How are you?
Oh, wonderful. Yeah, wonderful. We continue to enjoy William's contribution. He is a frequent listener and somewhat frequent participant in the program. And I think we may have, probably it was me, I wouldn't blame anybody else, I probably overdid it in his last, and the last time he was here making him feel uncomfortable, but William has a tenor to his voice, a tone to his voice, a cadence in his voice, a conviction in his voice, a compassionate note to his voice that resonates more than anyone I've ever heard. I mean, like, I think Larry has a
perfect
voice for radio. You know, Larry has a big, big, bold, powerful voice. But William's voice is just compelling. And William's voice is convicting. It goes right to your soul, and it speaks with such compassion and such conviction and such caring. I made those points. It's, you know, it's just a marvelous gift, and it comes right from the core of who he is. That I may have overdone it in my praise, but we all here think the world of William, as I know you do as well.
So do I. Yes, he is a wonderful, wonderful person.
He sure is.
He's family.
Yes. Yeah, he's family to all of us. Literally related to you, but spiritually related to the rest of us.
Yes, absolutely. Yep.
We're fond of William.
Well, the feeling is mutual. Every time I get together with him and his family, we just fellowship and talk about the Covenant family. Right. And it's just wonderful.
How's your son doing?
Meeting all of you.
How's your son doing?
He's doing very well, you know. He's coming along. You know, he gets tempted. He told me the other day, you know, I said to him, "Happy Shabbat, David," and he goes, "Oh, Mom, Happy Shabbat." He gives me a kiss and he says, "Mom, I got to get back to the Torah. You know, it's been a little while." And you know, I don't ask him. I'm glad that he even, you know, said that. He, on occasion, takes it, the Torah, to school, to college with him, and shares it with some friends. He teaches me a lot about...
Yeah, that's a wonderful thing about a son or daughter that embraces the Torah and the Covenant and how much you can learn together. It's kind of like this program. We talk to one another and listen to one another, and you learn a lot from one another. I have the same benefit, Amy, that you have, in that my youngest son is a participant in the Covenant. And when we are together, we learn a lot from each other. He will share ideas that I hadn't thought of that will expand my understanding, and vice versa.
Yeah.
So it's fun with our Covenant family to share. I don't feel badly about saying this, but because I think it's something that's consistent with Yahweh's nature. There is nothing more fun than sharing with someone who is part of your natural family and also the Covenant family.
Yes, absolutely. It's wonderful. It's so uplifting to me as a mother, and spiritually, you know, in my soul. It's really I'm so uplifted when my son comes to me and he wants to talk about Yahweh.
Yeah.
He'll ask me questions I don't have the answer to, and he'll investigate them himself. It's wonderful. It really is. It's a true blessing. It really is.
Yeah.
And I have the same benefit when I meet with Willie and my niece and his wife and the family. It's just it's wonderful.
I feel that way about Willie as well. I really do.
Yeah, I've seen pictures of Willie. It looks like he's a pretty strong, big guy. I'm not so sure I'm going to call him Willie to his face, but
oh, I can definitely call him Willie. We're going all the way back to the Bronx, back in the
day. Can he stand up? She'll do it too. Amy, you had a question.
You had a question, Amy. Go ahead. And by the way, it's fun still to talk about family stuff. So there's it's always an important part of us.
It's wonderful.
Meeting.
But I also, I know I've met Larry. Mm-hmm. Larry, you're just terrific. You are an incredible.
Bigger
benefit.
Than life, right?
Yeah,
right, really.
Yeah. Yes, in many ways. But I look forward to meeting you all, even, when I listen to you on Shabbat or sometimes Shattering Myths, but on Shabbat, and I read the chat room, all of the wonderful people in the chat room. Hello to all of you, my family. I don't know you. I try to register to get in there, but obviously I have problems getting in there. But I read, and I have a good time reading in the chat room. It's just wonderful people all the way around, JB and Keith and all the others. You're all wonderful. I'm delighted to be a part of this family. I really am.
That's one of this Friday evening Shabbat celebration is a realization that all around the world we're gathering as a family.
Yes.
To celebrate our relationship, not just with our Father. And that's one of the things about the covenant. I'm not sure we have given enough time to, which is that the covenant isn't just a relationship with the creator of the universe. I mean, putting just and creator of the universe in the same sentence might sound kind of stupid. And obviously that's the single best part of the covenant, is that we become a part of Yahweh's family, his sons and daughters. But, in family, there isn't just a relationship between father and son, father and daughter. There's a relationship between the sons and the daughters, right? The brothers and sisters also have a relationship in a family. And the part of the covenant that's going to be so rewarding throughout eternity isn't just the fact that we're going to camp out with Yahweh and we're going to explore the universe with Yahweh. We're going to explore it with one another. We're going to enjoy one another for all time. So this family that we're celebrating tonight is a huge part of the purpose of and the benefit of the covenant.
It's awesome.
Yeah, it's
awesome.
Not just that our participation doesn't just enrich Yahweh, and Yahweh doesn't just enrich us as part of it. We enrich one another.
Yes, so true. That's exactly how I feel. I feel like I just can't get enough of it. I can't get enough of the learning, of listening, just chatting, with you here. This is so meaningful to me. It really is.
Which is that the Yahweh's word is more pleasing to you than is great treasure.
Yes. Well said, Dode.
And then Dode's comment too was, he even talked about, it wasn't possessing great treasure, it was discovering great treasure. Because really it's the voyage of discovery that we go through in Yahweh's word that makes his word so enjoyable, so rewarding, is the voyage of discovery.
I hear that.
Absolutely. I piggyback off of that, a friend of mine, his name is excuse me, Herman Torres. He is just starting, over the past couple of months reading the Torah, and on occasion, he'll call me or I'll call him just to say hi. We're old friends, and he's almost yelling over the phone at what he's learning. Amy, do you know that Yahweh, and so on and so forth, and no, and the other. I mean, he he's just devouring it, you know, and when
yes.
I listen to that, I'm like, wow, you know, I even learn from that, how thirsty
yes.
he
right.
is for the truth.
It
know?
Isn't like bringing somebody into a church, is it?
No.
It's so much
no.
more real.
No.
Yeah, it's real.
No.
Reality-based.
So
and because it's real, it has the same double-edged sword that we talked about at the beginning of the program, which the next verse really celebrates, which is that there is a love and a joy of learning the truth, and there is at the same time a rage, a hatred against the lies. So as he is learning what is true about Yahweh, he is almost at the same time angry that he was deceived and that so many people are continually deceived when the truth is so much
yeah.
better.
That's right.
Yeah, it's this next statement. I'll share it, then we'll go on with your question. It says,
okay.
It says, I genuinely hate, I shun, and I am totally hostile, electing to consistently despise and continually denigrate, I should say, and disparage deception. So he hates, shuns, he's hostile to, he despises, he denigrates, and disparages deception. But I love your Torah. And so that really is the effect of what you just said, shared about your friend.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, the love of the Torah causes a hatred for religious and political deception.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, regarding Herman, even in the beginning, he reminds me of what I went through when Willie, or William.
When you say Willie, it's sweet. It's music.
It's got to be Willie.
And
okay.
By the way, even William, who I think is in the chat room this evening, when you introduced him as Willie, he embraced it and said, "Any one of you wants to call me Willie is just fine with me. don't worry about it." He's comfortable with it. We're comfortable with it.
Yes, I've always called him that. But anyway, yeah, you know, I remember when Willie just mentioned, you know, as I shared with you a while back ago, just a few things that challenged me and actually mm-hmm. I wanted to prove it wrong.
Correct.
What he said.
Yeah,
You know.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
And then
I went through that phase.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember reading that. And
yes.
And then there's this anger that came over me, just that I was deceived mostly, you know, all my life.
Yes.
And that's what Herman has been going through, you know.
Lost your sense of, we know Mr. Meany on the other line here has not lost his rage for those who deceive, and I know I have not lost mine. I'm still enraged. I still hate those who deceive. I know you went through that yes. as a phase. Are you still disgusted by them, or are you more?
I still am. As I'm learning, I'm trying to finish a Questioning Paul,
mm-hmm.
and I get so angry. You know, I do. I get
yeah,
angry
good.
that
good.
This happened and it's still happening.
Yeah.
I do. I get enraged,
and
then in the same, you know, it's bittersweet. And then I'm like, but Yahweh, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
You know that you, you know, my eyes are opened.
Yes.
And I have your Torah. I have the truth. No matter how late in life it is, I have that now. It is a treasure. But it does anger me. I mean, look, most of us, you know, when I listen to all these people and read in the chat room, we go out in the world, we go to work, and we listen to all this religious
mm-hmm.
nonsense.
Yes.
You know, at work, and school, wherever we go, it's exhausting.
It's exhausting.
And people don't want to hear it.
No. And, you know, it's pervasive in our society. I read the news because I do the show on the news, so I've got to stay informed of the news, and it's just amazing how political and religious the news is. And then the other thing I participate in is I love sports, and yet, man, it's becoming harder and harder to enjoy sports because it's become a celebration of the military and of patriotism. Oh, God, it just gagged me. It's We have come to love the lie.
Right. I don't want to take too much more of your time as I already have, but I just wanted to ask you a question that I have broached with Willie and Herman.
Okay.
And I was wondering what the, you know, Yahweh says about this. And I even heard you mention something that even prompted this question. Now, when I was a Christian,
mm-hmm.
and in the charismatic renewal as a Pentecostal and so forth, mm-hmm. we were really encouraged to listen to God's voice. And I'm going to use some of the religious verbiage, you know, to hear God's voice. And to know what, you know, the difference, you know, to discern between Satan and, you know, Jesus, this is what they call them. But to really reach that spiritual realm of hearing voices, you know, miracles and wonders and things of that nature. And we were always really heart-pressed, really encouraged to go to that place. And tongues and things of that nature.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I was in church every Sunday, you know, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, you know, we were asked, you know, have you heard the voice of God? You know, have you heard Jesus? You know, or the angels? You know, I've heard angels. Have you? I've heard God, you know, God told me this. The Holy Spirit told me this. So my question to you is, you know, I know that Yahweh speaks to us through his Torah, plain and clear, beautifully.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any other way? Because I've even heard you mention how you made a deal or a pact with Yahweh.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How, you know, does he speak besides Torah in any other way to his covenant children?
The answer is no.
Okay.
The answer is no. And that sounds awfully flat, but I'm going to tell you that when the Pentecostals encourage you to listen to the voice of God, they were not encouraging you to read, to recite the Torah so that you could listen to him. That's not what they were encouraging you to do.
No.
They wanted you to kind of meditate, and they wanted you to hear this, claim that you heard this this voice. There is not one of them ever who has heard the voice of Yahweh. Never once.
Okay.
And so when they claimed to do so, they may have heard a voice, but it certainly wasn't God. When they claimed to do that and asked you if you have, what they're doing is the same thing that those of us who were more standard Protestant religions, we always work to try to prove to others that our belief was growing and was strong and was firm and was, you know, better than the other guys. You know, this is the boasting of faith, if you will. Have you heard the voice of God? Now, I can hear the voice of God when I recite his Torah. Now, I can also hear the voice of God when I read his Torah quietly. Because when I'm reading his Torah, whether I am stating the words and I'm hearing them come out of my mouth and then into my ears, or I'm just listening to what he has to say by reading it and contemplating the meaning of the words, the impact is identical. And that's where we hear the voice of God. Now, I said that I had, and this was actually before I knew Yahweh, when I was having this discussion of I'll do this, but only on these conditions. The answer that he provided me was the 91st Psalm. So even in his answer, he had a mission he wanted undertaken. I was not a member of the covenant at the time. I knew that there were issues with Christianity. I knew that he was God, but I really didn't know him at the time. And this is very common. I mean, you look at, we're reaching out to Moshe. Moshe didn't know him. He reached out to Abraham. Abraham didn't know him when he first reached out to him. But Yahweh, being free of the constraints of time, knows those of us who are going to choose of our own volition to engage in a relationship with him. And so he can choose to initiate the discussion. He initiated the discussion with me, but his answers to my requests were provided via the 91st Psalm.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, no, this idea of a conversation with God where we talk to Him and then He responds verbally to us is part of Christianity. It's the pray with, without ceasing. It's the God that's the micromanager in your life. And this is the problem of it beyond all of the things that we've just discussed. They will tell you that the Holy Spirit spoke to them.
Yes.
Well, I would say, why? What in God's good earth would the Holy Spirit, even if you knew it was the set apart Spirit, what would she have to say that hasn't already been said? You want to tell me that there's something that you, Amy, need to know Yahweh, to engage in the covenant, to answer His invitations, to be part of His family. You want to tell me there's something that you need to know that He didn't bother to share in the Torah, prophets, and Psalms?
He just waited all this time.
Well, I mean,
it was really important, but He didn't have time to tell us back then.
Yeah, so you tell me.
He's a busy God.
He's a busy God. I just
think of the world.
And you want to tell me, as a busy God and a God that could create the universe, that He's going to say, I'm going to omit something that's really important from my constitution on life, and what I'm going to do is 4,000 years later, I'm going to tell it to Amy. When I tell it to Amy, I'm not going to prove it. I'm not going to prove divine authorship of it, and I'm not going to get have a way to communicate with the rest of the world. But there's something that just Amy needs to know, and I'm not going to bother sharing it with the rest of the world. But we ought to be listening to that.
No, that's ridiculous.
It's just ridiculous.
And you know,
what does the Psalm say? The Torah is complete, lacking nothing.
Yes. Absolutely.
Right? And its purpose is to restore the soul. So as it relates to the thing that's the most important to you, Amy, and to me individually, which is the restoration of our souls, the renewing of our souls, the Torah is complete, lacking nothing. So why would this whole notion of God providing a private revelation is just
it's so
nonsense.
Common. I mean,
right.
it's at every, you know, church service. I mean, actually, it's quite a dangerous realm that
you're
being asked to go through.
Yeah, it is.
Because, I mean, that's, if you didn't reach that realm, you were not really that spiritual. If you weren't that spiritual, you weren't that close to God or Jesus, as it were.
Private and personal revelation is extraordinarily dangerous, and in my experience, 100% of claimed private and personal revelation is inconsistent with Yahweh's testimony.
Can I chime in here real quick?
No.
It's so damning that Yahweh, thank you, in Zechariah, says that anybody who pretends to speak on his behalf during the millennial Shabbat, their own parents will stab them.
That's correct.
Pierce them.
That's right. That's right.
Know,
so private revelation does not exist. Now, that doesn't matter. You know, I always think of Richard, who's in the chat room, one of my favorite people in the entire world. And one of the places where Richard and I had some friction early on is that I am prone to have my conversations with God be 99% listening to Him and 1% responding by my enthusiasm in what I'm learning and an appreciation for what I'm learning as I study His Word. That's my primary conversation with Him. And my friend Richard would talk about how, you know, he just enjoyed his conversational time with God, and I don't do much of that anymore. As a Christian, I did it a lot, and I was kidding myself, and I don't do it a lot, but there is a communication nonetheless where I have actually moved closer to where Richard is now, where lots of times, just in my day-to-day life, I have just thoughts about like Yah was my company, and we're enjoying the beauty of the day, and we're enjoying the moment together. But the difference is that those kind of conversations and interactions aren't about understanding. They're not about teaching. They're not about, you know, coming to know who he is or the covenant. They're just the moments that you're sharing of something that is attractive or beautiful or fun or engaging at the moment. And, you know, it's a fleeting thing that just... Yeah, you know, if you see a beautiful sunset and you're all by yourself, I'm going to tell you, it's not nearly as attractive if you're there with somebody you care about and you can share it. And so we'll have those kinds of conversations, and I think that's really what Richard was talking about. I never, ever once have I ever received or sought a personal revelation from God. As a matter of fact, I have actually fought. I'm actually opposed to it. I don't want a personal revelation from God. I don't want anything that I say to be a personal revelation from God. I want everything to be based on what he told all of us. Now, that said, Amy, I think there's an extension of this that we should not overlook. And that is that when you're studying Yahweh's word and you're trying to make the connections so you understand what he is saying, that there are times when the words and the set-apart spirit come together to provide us with insights which lead to understanding and to unique revelations that are powerful, but they're all derived from the word itself. For example, coming to appreciate the fact that the set-apart spirit is the maternal manifestation of Yahweh. Not a lot of people know that, but yet when you study his word, it becomes obvious. You know, a lot of people know that the Mikre, that the first Mikre, Pesach, is the doorway to life. But when you study his word, it becomes obvious. You know, not a lot of people know that the yeast represents religious and political corruption and revolt against Yahweh. You study his word, it becomes obvious. So I do think there are insights that Yahweh provides, but he does so through his word so that what you're learning is not only consistent with what he has shared, but it's part of what he has shared. It's not unique in private revelation. And by the way, you know, there's a... if you're claiming that you have personal and unique, different revelation from Yahweh, you put yourself in a really precarious position. Because at that point, you have to be 100% right, 100% of the time, or you're a false prophet, and you don't want to be one of those.
Absolutely not. You know, I ask this because other religious people come to me with, and I used to, you know, be that way. I mean, I would always, you know, fervently, because, you know, our pastor, you know, was constantly encouraging us to do this, you know, the church.
Mm-hmm.
And,
yeah.
So,
yeah, it was,
you know,
wrong.
I mean, I was, yeah, and you know, I was deceived.
Yeah.
I was truly, truly deceived, because there were times where I was convinced it was from God. Convinced,
yeah.
Because it was,
yeah.
You know, there was.
Let me ask you another question, Amy. Do you, if I were to rattle off a conversation, a paragraph in spoken Hebrew, would you understand what I was saying?
No.
No. What language do you think Yahweh speaks? do you think
point.
That your pastor was fluent in Hebrew?
He was not fluent, no. He would try to teach us some Hebrew. Cause we were
a word
Hebrew.
Here and there. Yeah, well, like I do,
yeah.
Say, this is what Torah means. It's from... toe, which means your signed, written, and enduring Torah way of treating people, and explaining based upon the letters and the roots, and, you know, this is what the word means. You're fully capable of doing that, Amy. So is Larry. So is James. So am I. But unless you are absolutely fluent and not Babylonian Hebrew, but the original Hebrew of the Torah, if Yahweh spoke to you, you wouldn't understand a word he was saying. If he was speaking verbally to you, good luck with that. And he only speaks Hebrew. He does not translate for you, man. That's part of the learning process is if you're thinking in a different language than Hebrew, you've got to study the Hebrew to convey it. And unfortunately, we can listen to God when we examine the Hebrew words. That's the whole purpose of amplification. But this idea of I've heard the Spirit speak to me,
right.
Unless you're you ain't hearing it.
I want to jump in here real quick because one of the most astounding passages in Matanyahu, not that that's Torah, but it's still there. Many will say to me on this specific day, Lord, Lord, did we not speak inspired utterances and prophesy in your name and drive out demons in your name and perform mighty miracles in your name? Who is he describing? The exact people you want to hear. That's what they do. That's what those people do.
Yeah, thank you for reminding me, Larry, because
I didn't know you.
Yeah, Amy brought up miracles, too, and wonders and that sort of thing. And if you notice, Amy, that when Yahweh is providing a test of who not to trust, he always associates miracles and wonders with those you should not trust. And the passage that Larry just read tells us that those who claim to do miracles and wonders in the Lord's name are unknown to Yahweh. Paul constantly claimed to do wonders and miracles, and he claimed that as proof that he was communicating from God. But you see, the real God is not a show-off. He doesn't do wonders and miracles through us unless there is a very express purpose in a unique place and time. I mean, he engaged to free his children from the crucible of Egypt. And he will do a miracle and a wonder when it is essential to do so, but he's not a show-off. He's not going to prove that that he is responsible for, say, the translations in Yada Yah by having the Yada Yah .com website be the most powerful website in the world. You know, miraculous notoriety. It's not the way it works. It's not a show-off. God's just not a show-off. It's not part of his nature.
All of a sudden, Yada Yah is the top search on Google, no matter what you put
in. Right, no matter what you put in is the top. That would be a miracle. I'm not going to ask God for that. It's not in his nature. For those who are claiming miracles, they're doing the supernatural on behalf of a spirit other than Yahweh, because Yahweh does not show off. He's just not a show off. If Yahweh wanted to show off, we wouldn't have any option other than to know him. He would still be the booming voice.
Isn't that one of the signs of the man of Torahlessness, by the way? Isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Signs and perform great miracles. Yeah, absolutely.
Right.
Yep.
If that was how God operated, it wouldn't be going through a handful of individuals in any given church. If that was what he wanted, he'd just make the clouds spell out, my name's Yahweh. Quit with this Jesus stuff.
Yeah, he'll come back from the dead. You know,
if he really wanted to operate that way, he could do it a lot more efficiently. And Yahweh's pretty efficient.
Right. Yeah. No, Yahweh came up with a system that was the perfect screen for putting us in a position where eternity is going to be spent with the Willies and the Amys and the JBs and the Larrys and the Richards and the Lisas and the Pinks and the Chucks and et al. The Does out there. His filter was this desire mechanism. Do you treasure Yahweh's word? Do you really want to get to know him? Do you want to understand what he is offering? Do you find it enjoyable to spend time listening to him, learning from him? And if the answer is yes, then you are part of the, you'll end up being part of the covenant, and we'll spend eternity together, and we're all going to enjoy one another's company, because that's what we're going to be doing. We'll all be doing what we love the most. It's going to make eternity really fun. Yahweh could have chosen the big booming voice and the flashing light in the sky routine, but that would not have caused eternity to be filled with those who have a love affair with learning, with enjoying this whole process of discovery through his word. So he doesn't show off because it's counterproductive. It's actually a less efficient way, a less effective way, I should say. It's a less effective way of culling out those who do not belong and of filtering through those who are going to make eternity better.
Not to be redundant, but that also includes dreams. Is that correct? Because Revelation talks about dreams that might be dreams.
Yeah. Well, certainly, Yahweh has communicated to certain of his prophets through dreams, and he has enabled certain of his prophets to interpret dreams. It's my conclusion that there is no one in the last 2,400 years, or maybe longer, that Yahweh has communicated to via a dream, or that has provided the analysis of another person's dream. I don't think that has happened in over 2,500 years.
If it did happen, Yahweh gave us a test to determine whether or not that was real. So if someone comes to you claiming they had this dream revelation from Yahweh, look at Deuteronomy 18.
Yeah, I'm going to apply that test. I'm going to be suspect even before applying the test, because I would have to say, since Yahweh provided us with future history, he not only told us everything it's important to know about him, to know him, understanding what he wants through the covenant, how to participate in the covenant, how to meet with him, since he has explained how he created the universe and his timeline for everything, since he has told us that the Torah is complete, lacking nothing, his teaching is complete, lacking nothing, I'm automatically suspect when somebody says they have a new additional revelation from God, because God said, don't add to my teaching. Now, that being the case, you know, I start off as being suspect. It says, what in the world is God doing communicating something new to a person out there when he didn't bother to share it with all of us? That's just not like him.
Right.
Makes no sense to me. And then, of course, what they end up saying is they don't know his name, they don't know his character, they don't know the covenant, have a plan that an idea or a statement that's inconsistent with his nature. So, yeah, Devarim 13 and 18, JB. That test works for me.
Yep.
So, no, I am convinced that Yahweh stopped communicating through dreams somewhere between 2,500 and 3,500 years ago. And that it no longer serves any purpose. And even when you look at the revelation through his prophets, maybe 1% of it, a fraction of 1% of it, was via dreams. I don't even know if it's even a tenth of 1%. It's essentially insignificant.
Mm-hmm. And that, you know, that really infuriates me that I was almost, well, no one could force me to do anything. I have free, you know, I could say no. But I wanted to be close to God when I was a Christian.
Mm-hmm.
And it really infuriates me to think that I, you know, was going to that realm. And really it was the Ruach that helped me to, you know, get enough gumption to start speaking up. And, I mean, I did feel that there was something wrong with me. I did, because I felt I was rebelling. I didn't want to do those things anymore. It was just overwhelmingly like, don't do it. You know, something's wrong with this. And it angers me that people I love, friends, you know, are in this under the spell.
You look at the Hebrew word shamar, which means to observe. When you're asleep, can you observe?
No.
Your eyes are closed. Can you see?
No.
No.
When you're asleep, can you listen?
No.
So how in the world can you observe what Yahweh has to say and listen to what he has to say when you're asleep?
Well, a lot of, and even I've experienced, you know, some of these things in my lifetime, because it's been many years that I was a Christian, where you're in that place between sleep and awake, you know, and a lot of people have shared that with me as well. And when I think about what I saw back then, it's horrific. It really is. I'm glad that Yahweh protected me. That is not a good place to be.
And we have all been there to one extent or another, me more than most, in terms of the bad place of religion and being part of it and reinforcing it and conveying it. And as I say, I'm pleased that Yahweh's instructions are written in the imperfect, so that all we have to do is stop, and then we're no longer guilty of the perversion. And so you and I have been through it. For a while, I felt disgusted and disappointed that I was a Christian, that I was evangelical, that I promoted Pauline doctrine and taught Bible studies from his books. There was a period of time that I was very embarrassed by it, and it pained me. It doesn't anymore. And the reason it doesn't anymore is, first of all, it doesn't bother God. My father's not bothered by it. And just like the experiences that Moshe had that made him a more compassionate, more effective communicator of Yahweh's Torah than would he have been had he not come through the experiences in Egypt. I think that I'm better prepared to share the problems associated with Christianity, having been one. So now I look at it as, okay, I was wrong, but there's benefit to having come out of it. So you know, you're talking about, you know, some of the things that occurred and which was drilled into your head during the process. And it's going to make you a more effective witness, a more compassionate witness. You know, there's part of William, for example, that resonates with people because of where he has come from. You know, one of the things that causes Larry to have conviction in his voice as well is where he has come from. You know, he's been a soldier. And so he knows the mindset. It makes you so much more effective when you know the mindset. You know, I can tell you that exposing and condemning Christianity, like I do in questioning Paul, that no matter how much I loved and studied the Torah and even Dode's depictions here of the Torah, there is no way I could have written that had I not previously been a Christian.
Right.
So we can grow through our mistakes. It's part of growing up.
Boy, we better be able to. like a string of failures, pal.
Larry, to a large degree, one of the lots of reasons that I find you an enjoyable friend to spend time with. I mean, that I like you as an individual is where you've come from. I mean, I know that
we came from similar backgrounds.
Yeah, that did
well, that is a wild story, really.
Our whole experience, the things that we have been through, I think ultimately build some character and they make it real.
Let me tell you something, Craig. For a long time, every time I was posting your stuff, that's just Craig Wynn,
Yeah.
I said, these are just accurate translations done by Craig. That's right. So let's look at the real words as opposed to this nonsense you're used to. There were so many people, and still are, that are willing to call me and anybody else in the chat room a Wynnbot, believe it or not. We're Wynnbots.
Yeah.
And because we care about accurate translation and love once you start looking at them, you see how Yahweh communicates, and it's beautiful, really.
It is.
And yet, there are people that somehow spend their time wanting to attack you for accurate translations that you charge nobody, that you spent hours and years and months upon months putting together, spending your own dime, and getting it out to the rest of us for free.
Right. And correcting it when I find out that I'm wrong and admitting that I'm fallible.
Yeah, that.
Telling everybody, by the way, I'm irrelevant. Don't listen to me.
And not even using your name and saying you're irrelevant.
Top of all of that, to say, all I want to do is share with you what I have learned by studying Yahweh's testimony, and I'm going to share with you how I came, the tools that you can use, and I'm going to provide every word so that you can go and verify them yourselves, and I'm going to give you the whole toolbox. And there's nothing that I would find more enjoyable than you going off and doing this on your own.
The point that I'm making here is there seems to be people that just cannot stand the truth. They've got to attack the messenger. They
Correct.
Have to assault the truth. They have to assault me for sharing the truth.
Yeah.
They assault you for presenting the truth. That for whatever reason. And I think the only reason I can come to, and this is what I'm getting, is they're jealous. And, when I first heard you on the radio, and I looked you up and everything and said, wow, this guy's been an extremely successful guy. A lot more successful than most of us in the financial area will ever be. And yet when I first contacted you, you were about the most down to earth. You could have been a snob. But you're not.
Bottom line is
that alone.
Truly, Larry, I'm irrelevant.
I'm not saying
irrelevant.
You're saying you're relevant. You are relevant to me, and you're relevant to a lot of us. Because
I'm relevant to you only in the sense that I am
you're
your brother in the
and
covenant.
A family member.
And I'm part of the family, and I am as enthused about the family as you are. And we're relevant to each other because we're family.
That's right. I'm not saying that you're some... We don't even worship Yahweh here. We're people that understand. If somebody says, are you worshiping the right God? I jump in and say, if you're worshiping any God,
you're in the wrong.
I don't worship any God, so
right. No, we have a reason to be humble in the sense of we recognize how little we know and how little we understand compared to what we will know and understand. And we're humble in the sense that Yahweh encourages us to trust and rely on Him. And when we do, then, if that's our approach, that He's right and we ought to listen to him. We ought to follow him. We ought to trust him. We ought to listen to what he has to say. Then that approach works. That approach works. And the moment somebody says that they're important, then they cease to be of any importance, any value.
Or that they're a teacher, you know, and right. I've never heard you claim to be a teacher. You say,
no.
Yahweh's words are the teacher.
Teacher, absolutely.
He's pointing at the words, pointing at the words, pointing at the words. And you made a very strong point today when you're saying, you know, when you're looking at these words, you're seeing him. And,
you're seeing Yahweh.
You know, when you're
and
listening
that is the
to these
foundation
words,
of all of it.
Him.
Right. You want to want to meet Yahweh? Study his words.
Yeah.
You know, for example, I can't think of a much more profound statement about God than I genuinely hate, shun, and am totally hostile, electing to consistently despise, continually denigrate, and disparage deception. But I love your Torah. That is an absolute perfect representation of who Yahweh is. Of how he acts, of the. If you understand that, you understand everything that's in the Torah, prophets, and Psalms. You understand the nature of love, of meaningful relationships. It's all right there. You don't have to invent it, just share it. I will tell you, though, that I don't want anyone to defend me, and I will never defend myself because it isn't worth it. I will defend Yahweh. Does Yahweh need us to defend him? No. Is it the right thing to do? Absolutely. And you,
right,
do
you
the
know
same
what?
Thing.
I mean, I understand you don't defend yourself or whatever, and I don't really defend. I just ask, why would you attack a man that's giving you this work free? What? You know, he could be out on a golf course. What are you doing?
Yeah. And you're...
Cheap shot.
Free to disagree with the translations, okay? Come up with a better one.
Yeah, have at it.
Have at it.
Attacking Craig is pointless. It's completely a non sequitur. You know, Craig could be the most horrible human being in the world. It doesn't change the fact of whether or not what he writes is true or false.
Correct. Was Dode a stellar individual who was this perfect little sweetheart of a guy?
No.
700 wives.
But what he wrote was brilliant.
But what he wrote, and all he wrote about was one topic. He only wrote about one topic, and what he wrote about that topic was brilliant and accurate. He wrote about Yahweh's words. In fact, his writings are a commentary on, an explanation of, Yahweh's words. What he says, I am more pleased with your word than with great treasure. I hate deception, but I love your Torah. He's writing about the same thing I'm writing about. I mean, there's a difference, obviously, between Dode and myself. Dode is inspired to convey insights from Yahweh and was actually one of Yahweh's prophets, and all I'm doing is simply sharing what they conveyed to us.
His word.
Yeah, absolutely.
He was inspired by Yahweh's word. We are inspired by Yahweh's word.
Right.
It doesn't matter. It doesn't. That does. By the way, Rumi, you're tough. I know this about you. You're a tough woman, aren't you? Aren't you?
I don't think so. defending Yahweh and the Torah, I am.
Yeah.
I am.
And so we all are. We all are.
Yes.
Does Yahweh need us to defend him? No. But when you're part of a family, it's just what you do.
No. I have to say this to all of you listening who, you know, Larry and Craig and JD and all the others who do what you can to help us learn. You know, just I appreciate it. You know, I'm not elevating you. I'm not worshiping or praising like they do in churches. But I have to say, my brothers and sisters, that I really appreciate the effort and the time that you take to help, you know, us in the family.
Yeah.
I appreciate it.
But you know, Amy, that when you're learning what Yahweh had to say. There is a part of our nature as part of his family, learning what he revealed, that causes us to actually hurt inside if we don't share it. Sharing it is the joy. It makes the discovery fun. I use this illustration all the time, whether it be a rainbow or a sunset or a waterfall. You see something attractive. If you're there all by yourself, okay, it was attractive, and you glance at it, and say, oh, that's a pretty sunset. If you're enjoying it with someone you love, then it becomes a very special moment.
Absolutely.
Learning that Dode celebrated the Torah and provided us a tool to teach us how to observe Yahweh's Torah. If I'd spent the time for my own selfish interests to learn that, it would have been rewarding. But if I didn't share what I had learned, it would not have been nearly as rewarding as it is when we share and we interact with one another on what we have learned. So what I'm saying is that the thing that makes it enjoyable is the sharing of it. That's the nature of love. It's the nature of relationships. It's the sharing that makes it enjoyable. So, it's kind of like thanking somebody for having fun, thanking somebody for doing something that is personally rewarding for them, that's enjoyable for them. So the whole concept is funny to me because, as I say, we share because it makes the whole voyage of discovery so much richer and enjoyable. And let me tell you something else, Amy, that I found a long time ago, is that when I'm reading something and learning something, my understanding, my ownership of what I'm learning is fairly limited. But if I'm teaching somebody by sharing what I have learned, then my ownership of the material, my grasp of the material, is hugely enhanced. And I would think of Larry as being a great example of that. Larry, no matter what somebody brings up as an objection to Yahweh, Larry knows what Yahweh said about that and will teach others what Yahweh said in response. And when you're engaged in sharing what you have learned, your ownership, your ability to completely own that material, to make it part of the fabric of your life, is hugely increased.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you agree, Larry?
Yes, I do.
And sharing it.
When you're sharing, you're learning. You get into the debates and you're out there swinging and you're always learning something. I tell you, sometimes I get so rough with these people in debates, I wonder why I did it, okay? But when I walk away and I really look at it and I go back and read it, I said the right thing. There's nothing to be kind about with people that trash Yahweh's nature. I hate it when they trash Yahweh. I hate that more than anything.
119:163. I completely and genuinely hate, shun, and am totally hostile, electing to consistently despise and continually denigrate and disparage deception, misleading statements, lies, that which is unreliable. Do you think that the Dode pretty much understood Yahweh's point of view on this?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think he did. I think it was straight out. And Dode didn't have a problem, going out and wiping out the tribes that were in opposition.
It is a double-edged sword here, though. And Dode didn't just leave it as I despise and denigrate and disparage deception. He says, but I love your Torah. And that really is the combination of those two things. It is the love of the Torah that will cause you to despise deception. But if you don't despise deception, you're never going to come to know the Torah, much less love it.
It's true.
Yeah, and exposing and condemning myths is incomplete if you don't share the truth. I mean, having somebody understand that Christianity and Islam are unreliable deceptions is only valuable to that individual if the individual, recognizing that they're untrue, now invests the time to come to know who Yahweh is. Otherwise, I mean, what's the difference in believing there's no God versus believing a false God?
Or not knowing God.
Yeah,
that
right.
was where I was for so long. I had rejected all the religions. I didn't know
right.
Yah. And I
right.
was better off than I was to begin with, but I still wasn't in a good position.
Correct. So simply disparaging deception is inadequate. It's the combination of disparaging and denigrating deception with a love of the Torah that is what resonates. That's what makes a difference in people's lives. That's why there is a family that gathers here as part of this program and celebrates the covenant and celebrates our relationship with Yahweh and with one another.
Hey, can you do me a favor here? Can you give me your email again, Craig? For some reason, what I keep sending keeps bouncing back at me. What's the best email?
The best one, really, for the things we're talking about is just yada@yadayah.com. Yada? yada@yadayah.com is really the best.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, my personal email.
I always send it to Craig.
You always send it at craigs@wins.org. And you're welcome to use that. It's just that it is kind of easier for me to compartmentalize, my life if the things that pertain to the family and Yahweh are via the yada@yadayah.com. And then, stuff that's just part of the minutia of life is part of the that other email. It's just a little easier. You've always used my personal email, and I've never bothered to say.
For some reason, it keeps bouncing back because I'm probably hitting the wrong Craig ad. I think I did
maybe. And it's plural and it's org, not com. But anyway, yada@yadayah.com.
Okay.
Always gets to me. In your emails, I recognize you. I'm more apt to respond quickly. I do have an issue, and for all of those who are listening to the archives that have written me and I didn't respond in a timely fashion, I will very often go 4 or 5 days without responding to the yada emails, and I'm not speaking to you, Larry, because you don't ever write long emails, but some people write pages and pages and pages and pages, and it just eats your day up, and I eventually get to read every email to me, and I typically respond to 90% of them. But please don't get mad if I don't, because a lot of times what happens to it, it might be a long email, and I will get in the midst of reading it, so now it's marked as read. And I'll get distracted, get onto something else, and forget to go back to it and finish reading it and responding to it. And then people get mad that I didn't respond to their email. And
I sent you an email 6 months ago, and you never replied.
Yeah, oh boy, I get so many hostile letters.
Yeah, you're on the ball, man. Thanks, pal.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I try to be helpful, but I'm not.
My brothers, I'm going to say adios.
Yes, me too.
Feliz Shabbat. Have a wonderful Shabbat. I love you, family, and thank you. Thank you so much.
It's
always a pleasure.
Part of the program.
Always a pleasure.
Larry, James, good night, fellas.
Thanks.
Good night. Bye-bye.
Enjoy the Sabbath.
You too.